This is CliffCentral.com.
Oh, Mubs is just saying now, do we think that this song is sexual?
What is he doing with his slow hands? Where are his slow hands?
Well, where do you think? What do you think he's doing with them?
Well, is he talking about his guitar player? Because there were some vigorous errors in that song.
Well, he starts off by saying, like, I just want to take my time.
Yes. Explore your body.
We should take this back to my place.
I think this is the first time I'm actually listening to the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard just a little bit of them, and that's what I thought. Oh, is this a sexual song?
Does it make you horny, baby?
Well, let's be honest. All songs are sexual.
Yeah.
We've all got problems. Some of us just care for consent, and other, like Harvey Weinstein, don't. We're not all that different as animals.
So listen to this. Someone's just sent us a message from Dubai and said there's a place called Nusret in Dubai. The restaurant takes your name for reservations, but not your number. If you're 2 minutes late, they give your table away. If you take too long to choose your meal, they take the menu off of you and bring you a meal of their choice.
Ooh.
And if you
complain, you are told that you're free to eat elsewhere.
Wow.
Fantastic.
No, I will eat elsewhere.
Nusret.
No, that's a nuisance. What am I paying for? I'm paying to take my own time, to be spoiled for choice. No thanks.
Someone says, I would hate being a teacher dealing with different kids and their bad attitudes.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I think it is. But if you want to be a teacher and you love kids, you'll find a way, you know? And it's a challenge for you. Someone says, when is Gord visiting again? Is he coming tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Okay, good. The collective noun for Star Wars fans, according to Roman, is virgins.
Oh. No,
says the biggest smoker of the douche flute that we know.
Oh, jeez.
It's a bit intense.
A lot of people very excited about Tumi Soul coming on yesterday and our announcement that there'll be a country duty show on cliffcentral.com soon.
Is he... I thought I'd line up with Chaka Block. Where's Frankly Speaking? Are they collaborating?
No, they're not collaborating. They've got nothing to do with each other, Frankly Speaking. Frankly Speaking is on a Wednesday morning. These guys are going to be on Wednesday night.
Okay. I'm just looking after my favorites.
Michelle says, I was born in a bad mood and just got older. December is a stressful time where you're working and there's a drought and onslaught of tourists are already here. Yeah, well, you chose to live in Cape Town, Michelle.
Yeah, see, Michelle, this is the thing. Like, Cape Town's like cast in stone. Everyone thinks this is the way forward.
Oh, shame, Cape Town. Hey, like,
whenever I see a Joburger move to Cape Town, I think it's like this rite of passage, like they've made it. Like, you know that show, that movie, The Island?
Mm.
Where all the clones seem to go to this amazing island meal, they're just getting like
Scarlett Johansson.
It's like Joburgers. They go, that's it, I'm going to Cape Town. Everyone's like, yeah, like, wow.
Ben has no respect.
Don't look down on us who want to retire and like.
Do you have a lot of Cape Townians who hate you because of the way that you speak about? And bearing in mind that you are from Cape Town yourself.
Well, that's where I feel I've got the ability to talk from both sides. It's just like this. Everyone feels they must be excited about moving to Cape Town, but as Michelle just put in one message, who lives in Cape Town.
Did you always feel like you were born in the wrong city, just like some people are born in the wrong body?
No, not at all. I was born a human.
Caitlyn Jenner. Yeah. Like Bruce
where
Jenner.
I was
born in a man's body, but I really am a woman.
See, I wasn't even born in Cape Town. I was born in a far worse place, but I lived in Cape Town.
P.E.
Yeah.
Right.
Did I let that define me?
Lest we forget.
Have I? Is this my cross to bear? No, we moved on.
There we go, Ben.
P.E.
Pioneer on with strength.
All right, let's get on with some news, shall we?
All right.
What do you got for us, Mubs?
Let's begin with Cape Town, who are now, if the city has their way about it, going to possibly be facing a new drought.
God.
Charge.
See, the place is a disaster area.
A proposal by the city of Cape Town to impose a drought charge on residents is set to face off opposition at a full council meeting that will be happening today. However, the ANC and the ACDP have already indicated that they are unlikely to support this move. The city has already applied to Treasury for an exemption to levy Cape Town households over the next 4 years all because they want to raise funding for water projects. You see, this is the thing, is if you are in government and you are looking for solutions for your good people, very rarely do those solutions come at a cost of nothing. So the city of Cape Town are thinking they have to raise quite a lot of money if they are going to start on solutions to deal with the water crisis in that part of the country.
Yeah. Oh.
The city says that it will need at least R1 billion a year to pay for drought interventions while dams recover.
What?
But that would mean charging households. So how would you, who is now living in Cape Town or has recently relocated to Cape Town, as Ben laughs at you, feel about the possibility of paying a drought charge? Let's put some numbers into play. A property worth R2 million would be billed around 115 rand, while commercial properties worth more than R50,000 would also have to pay up. Those with homes less than R400,000 are exempt from paying the levy, which would start at around R35 a month. This is a proposal by the city.
How pretty is that mountain now?
Ben. But seriously though, a drought charge?
Someone's got to pay.
Well, that's the thing. Somebody's got
to
pay.
You see Patricia, the little, like, breaking into someone's private property yesterday to go and switch off their meter?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, yes, this.
Does she do that armed with tons of photogs and...
She should just charge whoever. Listen, if someone wants to use more water than there is, just make them pay through the nose for it. That's the only way to make people
It's
learn.
Gone beyond that now. It's not about money. There's nothing to pay for.
Right, in other words...
People must be broke. They must have their houses broken into and have the indignity of Patricia the Little scaling their fence. This is a punishment they ever suffer.
Mm. They actually deserve the shame, Bal. That's
is Patricia, or do they?
No, they.
We're far beyond the shame, Bal, at this point.
I'm all behind Patricia. I'll give her a leg up to get over a wall. Patricia, I've got your back.
And your foot.
I don't know. The day a politician tries to climb over my wall for any goddamn reason, I'm shooting them down.
Just don't misbehave. It's not
I don't want politicians coming anywhere near my house. I'll put Gatling guns on the roof if I have to.
Just be considerate.
There's no reason a politician should ever come and visit me. Stay away.
Unless you have a fountain, a massive fountain in the middle of a drought.
If I'm paying for that water, then leave me alone.
Okay.
All right. If you're paying for that water, then you also have no problem paying a drought levy.
Right, exactly. And then I'll pay for all those other people who are complaining that I'm using all the water.
Today they will look at trying to vote this suggestion into effect, but, you know...
They're out of ideas, huh?
The ANC and the SCDP have already said that they are unlikely to support this move. This is what it's all about.
Sure. You see, I really don't know that government are the best people to administer things like water. And let this be a canary in the coal mine for the rest of us, because people have been talking about water as a strategic resource for a long time, right? And everybody's saying, well, you know, there's going to come a day where people will have to pay a fortune for water. It'll be a very scarce resource. It'll be difficult to come by. And we're experiencing that in Cape Town. So as much as I feel the pain of Capetonians, and it's not nice when everybody climbs on and mocks Cape Town, no one asked for this, and no one deserves it in Cape Town necessarily. It's just the weather. It's just that it's a result of geography and meteorology. But the reality is that this is just what the future might look like, and we've got to find ways of dealing with it. We've got to be able to turn moisture in the air into liquid water, which is consumable. We need to find ways to turn the water in the sea into consumable fresh water. Otherwise, we are going to be screwed as a species. Mm-hmm. So this is a big alarm bell for everybody.
But also with global warming, believe it or don't, depending on which stance you have politically, but with the polar ice caps melting and sea levels rising, we should by anyway be taking the water out of the sea and putting onto the land. Is that not just science?
That's an interesting point from Ben.
Well, the Cape Flats, they're going to be washed away in 40 years, whatever it is. What if we start taking the water out of the sea, get progressive about this, proactive.
Fill the dams.
Yeah, and then take that sea. Yeah. You're not lapping
Ben
up in our house.
Ben is trying to fight the sea, which is okay. That's one way of looking at it.
Well, Gareth, the best fights are the biggest fights.
All right. How's that? See ya. Put that in said by see ya tomorrow.
I'm actually still processing it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's technically correct, isn't it?
I'll get back to you about that tomorrow.
Just watch an Al Gore video once in your life, see ya.
Oh.
Get your engines rolling every week with the Auto Central show, which is powered by Auto Trader on cliffcentral.com. Industry leader Auto Trader has joined forces with us to bring you Auto Central, which is an expert motoring and infotainment show. Get behind the wheel every Monday from 10 to 11 a.m. with the team as they gear up for all things motoring, from the more affordable to the most desirable cars, bikes, 4x4s, and more. And if you didn't catch the show live yesterday, then you can listen to it on podcast today. They aim to make everyday shopping decisions easier while putting some fun back into motoring. That's Auto Central right here on cliffcentral.com. Back to you, Mubs.
Okay. A University of Nevada study has found, after examining people's perceptions of a man, what makes a man, that the answers to the questions asked are all based on whether or not his wife adopts his surname.
Oh, really?
Or retains her own. Yes, mm-hmm. That's what makes a man, people, is whether or not your wife takes your surname or decides against it. Because, according to the study, men are perceived as powerless and less masculine. Oh, the horror. If their wives choose not to take their surnames after marriage. Researchers conducted 3 studies in the UK and the United States. And according to Rachel Robnett, who is the head researcher of the study, When a woman chooses not to take her husband's surname after marriage, people perceive her husband as being higher in traits related to femininity and lower in traits related to masculinity. Robnett added that the tradition of women adopting their husband's surnames after marriage was arguably one of the most widespread gender norms in Western cultures. And in recent decades, it has gained attention from feminist scholars who want to understand why the surname tradition remains wildly endorsed despite marked changes in the role that that men and women play when they are married.
Do you have a strong feeling about this?
I don't care either way. But then again, I'm never getting married, so I don't have to care. But if I did, it would be of no consequence to me to take his surname. It would make no change in my life whatsoever.
It just sounds like a long day at home affairs that could be spent doing better things. Like, I believe in love and marriage and all that kind of stuff, but is it really important?
If you're going to have children, it matters, because it matters what surname the children have.
Sure, again.
And if mom and dad don't have the same surname, it can be confusing, because that's how other kids in the class will identify themselves, blah, blah, blah. I don't have feelings either way. I mean, if I do get married, I'm not going to force my way onto someone.
Well, men who don't have an issue with their wives not taking their surnames are considered to be more secure in themselves.
You would think, right?
Well, this is what psychologists say. So as a man, you're more secure. The problem here is that everybody else around you looking at you are the ones who think that you're a puss.
I think you're a puss.
Even though you're secure in yourself.
That word works for aristocracy. What you're thinking is a pussy.
They think you're a pussy. Everybody else around you thinks you're a pussy, even though you as the guy are very much like, always, I don't care either way.
Always finish your
word. I suppose
this
also depends on how much you care about what other people think.
Yeah.
And for a lot of women, I suppose it matters what other people think. You know, for a lot of women, it matters if you call them Mrs. or Miss or Ms. Mm-hmm. I've had, like, real issues of aggression occur when I've called a married woman Ms. Because with Ms., you're not really interested whether they're... I don't care whether you're married or not. I'm meeting
That's
you. It's a
MS.
Business. MS. Mm-hmm. Which is... It's kind of a... It means it's not important to me whether you're married or not. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to you as an individual, you know? And someone once said to me, it's Mrs.
Ooh,
I was like, shit, okay. I didn't realize it meant so much to you that you had to be in a situation with a man where you were legally tied together. But clearly it did, right?
Yeah, it still matters to a lot of women.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you are married, you're considered higher than the rest of us.
Yeah, smug married. And then for a lot of single women, they don't want to be thought of as misses. So when you say to them, oh, hi, Mrs. Whatever, and they go, I'm Miss. Now, with men, you don't have to worry about that because it's always Mr.
Yeah.
Right.
So, well, let's just go. Well, I still consider myself Master.
Well, that's if you're a young man.
Thank you.
Once you get to about 18, you should go for Mr.
And we've had this conversation before.
I'll still claim Master anyway.
No, we've had this conversation before.
As you were getting to your point.
Anyway, look, I don't know that it matters. And I think that for a lot of people, it probably does, but it's a feeling. It's how they feel about themselves. And like Mabali says, if you're a man who's insecure about yourself, then your wife not taking your surname is going to bother you because you think you own her. And it's important that your ego is fulfilled by her being called Mrs. whatever your surname is.
Well, it's not me, Gareth. It's a psychologist say that.
That's your business.
May I admit something? And please don't pull out your spears and come for me right now.
Right, I am we can't guarantee that.
I would like to consider myself a forward-thinking, open-minded individual, but also I will admit I'm very traditional with some of my thinking. I remember a few months ago we got into a massive thing because I did not like the First Lady of the United States with short hair, like what, and like busy flipping it around. All's in the same thing. Like, I don't want to stipulate what you must do in your marriage, mm-hmm. but if I were to get married, it's about the idea of you being one and just growing and being two peas in a pod. So I like this thing of sharing a surname, and it's about, you know, having someone lead you in that marriage, whoever it is. But I don't know.
What are you getting at?
I don't know.
I don't understand.
Like the idea of a man taking a woman's surname.
I don't know that there are a lot of examples where the man takes a woman's surname. Like, a lot of the time, the woman will just have a double barrel surname.
Yeah, so,
and a lot of the time, the reason that she does that is because of professional reasons.
The
so it's not in her best interest to change her surname.
Mm.
The actress Zoe Saldana,
mm-hmm.
she's married and her husband actually took her surname.
Why did he do that?
Because his surname was Pilo Shit.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, then in that
but
case,
just to
you know,
prove, like,
Tom
doesn't matter
Tom
to us.
Tom Pilo Shit.
If it's going to be a leg up.
You know.
Also, like, Victoria Beckham, she was always going to take that name.
Yeah.
You wouldn't, obviously.
Sure.
Mm. Look, there might be some instances where it's in the man's best interest to take the woman's surname if it's obviously a very powerful and influential surname.
If my surname was, let's say my name was Fred Sewerage.
You would want to change it as soon as you become legal.
I would Peter take, File.
Yeah. Peter File. Peter File. And then I wanted to change my name to my wife's. That would be totally understandable.
Totally fine.
Yeah.
Not masculine in any way, shape, or form. But what does Meghan Markle do? So is she going to be Meghan Markle Royal Princess?
She doesn't have a choice.
Well, she's not really even going to get a surname.
Can you imagine the Queen will throw her down the stairs if she was to come in there with this double barrel
blocky? Doesn't she lose her name entirely? That's what happened to Kate, right? She's now the Duchess of something.
Yeah. Cambridge. Yeah.
Like, they don't even call you by your name
people
anymore.
People back at the
you're just the Duchess.
And back at the caravan site, they still call her Kate. Hello, Kate.
Where her father filed for bankruptcy and...
Well, they actually still call her Spin Drive because those are the washing machines she always used to flog.
Oh, Ben.
Okay, so Kate became the Duchess of what...
Catherine.
So-and-so.
Yeah.
But what does Meghan get? I mean, because, you know, when you marry a decent royal, you get a decent title.
Yeah, but that's the Queen's decision. She'll probably give them something when they get married.
Like Duchess of YouTube.
Remember,
or something.
William had nothing until he married Kate. Then as soon as she saw, okay, he's going to marry her, he's going to produce offspring, the royal line is safe. Then she said,
William, I have a surprise for you. You're now the Duke of Cambridge.
And he said, oh, thanks, Grandma.
That always.
Well, he's very middle class. Haven't you heard the way he speaks? He doesn't sound like an aristocrat. He doesn't sound like an aristocrat.
You're a snob, but...
Of course I am.
Yeah.
We've known this.
William doesn't speak properly.
Yeah, but sometimes people who speak properly
it's like Hugh Grant in Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Oh. But on that royal tip, I saw a headline when they got engaged that read, actress marries failed soldier.
That's good.
Talk about gender norms.
But remember we were talking yesterday about actors and how they're the lowest of the low? So
they found each other at the lowest of...
Right.
And now, actually, Megan has to go through a series of security training before they actually get married.
Sure.
Oh, is this before or after they teach her how to get out of a car with her legs together? Because
yeah, so
you remember,
flash a bead
because
like
you
Britain
remember, says. Women are so fucking stupid that they've got to be taught these things.
Some women do. Have you seen Britney and Paris Hilton's pics?
Do you want to go back to
yeah,
the
but that was a trend. No, that was a trend. That was something that had to be done so that you got into the headlines. It's not because they didn't know how to.
Oh, come on. Britney was just drunk.
she didn't know what was going on.
Britney still doesn't know what's going on.
She didn't know whether this was coming or going. But this is supposedly security training each senior member of the royal family needs to complete. So this involves
when
a series
they're
going of...
When they shoot a bullet at you, duck down.
Yes.
If it looks like a terrorist is heading your way, chop them up with your cavalry saber.
There we go. It involves things like a kidnapping scenario. So Megan will have to experience this firsthand, you know, and especially also they'll do a fake hostage situation as well. She'll, for example, be put into a room, treated like a hostage, the room being stormed.
She'll excel at this.
Yeah.
Actually true. Yeah, the room will be stormed by the special air service and to see how she'll tackle that situation. But for example, Duchess of Cambridge went through this in 2011, but Princess Di went through this.
She went bare knuckle boxing with those SAS guys.
Yeah. Look, but
Kate Middleton. I almost said Turkington.
I'd love to know how Fergie went through this.
She looks like she has
a soldiers coming through the roof.
A strong right hook.
What a nice soldier! You soldiers are so big and burly.
Oh no!
Can I have a look at the kidnappers before we evade them?
Oh no!
Hey, don't talk about Duchess of York like that. But when Lady Di, actually, when she did it, they simulated a shock grenade, which actually set her hair light. So her training didn't exactly go well. So, Megan, good luck for you, though.
Somebody says... even though her hubby is quite well off and has a name of his own, Ivanka is still Ivanka Trump, not Kushner.
Mm. Yeah, because in that scenario, doesn't Trump trump Kushner? I mean, her surname is bigger than... It's more powerful than
it's
his.
It's the greatest surname.
It's the greatest.
It's the most powerful surname.
Yeah, it wouldn't make sense for her to lose her surname.
Would you change your name to your wife's name if your name was Mike Hunt? Mike Hunt, sorry.
Sorry.
Yes, I would.
Mike Hunt. Yeah. Yeah. You'd change that to Mike Sangreni.
Well, no, you would sue your parents, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong having a traditional name like Hunt, but if your parents call you Mike, they don't like you. Leave home instantly.
Yeah. They want you to be mocked.
I would want a Rothschild, Rockefeller, who else in South African terms? An Ackerman. Well, I would swap for an Ackerman.
Well, Sangweni Finn's double barrel.
That's why we're done with that. No.
As soon as
I find a Rothschild.
Oh, you're going to link that up.
Oh, in 2 seconds.
Okay, here's someone who says, thank you, Mubs. I just got married and decided to take my wife's surname because I owe my family nothing. It was logistically more practical for me to change my paperwork.
Wow.
I didn't realize how seriously people would take it. I got hell from some of my friends over this. Why is it an issue?
That's a good question. Why are your friends so bothered by something that has nothing to do with them?
You have to get married under the Civil Union Act, which was created for same-sex marriage as opposed to the Marriage Act, for the man to take the woman's surname. My lawyer even looked at me sideways when I suggested doing this. My cousin never took her husband's surname. They've just had a baby boy, and the husband insisted that the child take her surname. He doesn't like his family history, so he wanted the kid to have a surname that he could be proud of.
Ooh.
Well, I suppose, you know, you could do that too. It's just, like, ignore the one half of the family. You can. You're allowed to do what you want.
Yeah, people just do whatever the heck they want. Because I know a couple as well who just created their own surname. They're like, we're creating our own lives. Hmm. We're forming one here. So
they made up their own... They made up a whole surname?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nothing wrong with that.
It's like clean slate. That's it.
All right.
Moving on.
What else is in the news?
All right. Let's get into further details with regards to this story involving our public protector and the allegations that she has made that there was improper spending with regards to Mandela's funeral.
Right.
Now, she has found widespread maladministration and misappropriation of funds amounting to hundreds of millions of rands. This is by the Eastern Cape provincial government, and it is in relation to the funding of the former president's funeral. She released the findings of the investigation in Pretoria yesterday afternoon. Madiba died back in December of 2013, was laid to rest in his hometown of Qunu in the Eastern Cape, and Mkhwebane says that hundreds of millions of rands were improperly spent. She says whether the Eastern Cape provincial government improperly diverted public funds, this is the problem, is that it's meant to be public funds, mm-hmm. amounting to 300 million, the allegation is substantiated.
Wow.
There was no properly coordinated plan for all different role players in the funeral and related activities from the level of national, provincial, and local government entities. She has also ordered the president issue a proclamation for the special investigating unit to swoop in and investigate unlawful appropriation of funds and expenditure.
Wow.
This is in relation to over 300 million rand.
It's a lot of money to waste.
Yeah.
And how's this only coming out now?
Well, they've been investigating it. Remember when it happened about a week or two later, there were allegations of graft, and you could see some of the money had been spent on things like T-shirts, where it should have been used to build infrastructure and houses and that kind of thing.
Well, I told you when I was in Transkei this year and I went past the area, everything's closed until like 2073 or something.
No, you can't even go and visit Madiba's grave yet.
There's not even a place to go and visit.
So you've got to ask what they've spent all that money on.
300 million rand.
Mm. Yep. How do you like that?
Like, Mabali, your words are ringing true from last week when you said, and I'm paraphrasing here, why do we get to this point and this is only when we wake up? You know, when you get 50,000 rand unaccounted for, or that's surely when you should already be raising your eyebrow.
Yeah, well, the Eastern Cape provincial government is not exactly above board. They spend a lot of money on things that they shouldn't be spending money on. And sometimes it takes a little while to investigate this stuff. It's just, at least it's coming to light. Maybe finally Busisiwe Mkhwebane is trying to find a case that she can actually win as well. And a case that will improve her standing in most South Africans' eyes. Because most South Africans look at her and they go, bit of a puppet that one.
Mm.
All right, so let's see. Maybe she's just trying to score a couple of points here. And at least she's found a really willing... Rather, an appropriate set of circumstances to investigate. It's an important story, this. It was around a time where everybody was too emotional to be paying attention to the numbers. So now we go back and we tidy it up. Everybody, you know, I see the news, and you see these people who, like there was this doctor who's in charge of Gauteng Health, and this guy went to court to try to get himself released from having to testify at the life estimani hearings. You know, I'm obsessed with these life estimani hearings, right? This guy was in charge of... He made the decision to move the psychiatric patients to all these NGOs. And now he doesn't want to testify. So he goes to court to prevent them from forcing him to testify. And he loses. And today he'll be testifying.
It's a tough one to ask people to account for, Gareth. I mean, it sounds to me like this guy is running scared and he was looking for options to not have to testify.
Then
but
you shouldn't take a job.
Somebody has to account.
Exactly. If you don't want the job and you think it's going to be too difficult and you're going to be held to account for things that you shouldn't really have to be responsible for, don't take the job. Let this be a lesson to everyone in government, because we will come after you one by one if we have to. To find the people who are responsible, especially in this case where all these people are dead.
I'd love to know in his head how he was justifying why he shouldn't testify.
But to me, it shows like immediate guilt.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It shows immediately you've got something to hide. You don't want to testify. Why? Because you're worried you might say something to incriminate yourself? Well, maybe you should go and testify then. Take your chances, because you're already in trouble. And by going to court to prevent it, you're proving that you're a suspicious character. I don't know. It just drives me crazy. By the way, does anyone know if Dani Mahlangu has already testified?
No.
Yeah, because I've still got to see that on TV. See whether she makes any sense at all. Apparently she was in there, but I haven't seen it myself. If you know anything about that, please tell us. I think the Public Protector's report is going to be used as a diversion. I don't trust her one little bit. Yeah, you see, that's the problem too, is that she's dealing with a lot of cynicism when it comes to her role in South Africa. Busisiwe Mgwabane has done very little to show us that we should have faith in her. So I understand that. My cousin... hang on. I'm getting married and the last name is a problem. Let both couples keep their names and keep it unchanged. You don't need to change things like email addresses and save on admin costs. When the child arrives, let the child take the woman's surname, since it's more hers than his anyway. Might still be a challenge for homosexual couples and parents that adopt. How do you like that? There's a very practical solution to the problem.
You know, to me, it does sound practical. Also because, I mean, these days, chances are you're going to end up divorced anyway. And then you've got to go through the admin of changing your name back again. I mean, can we just cut out the admin from our lives?
No,
really. I don't even mean that horribly. But chances these days are you're more likely to end up divorced than not. It's numbers. It's stats.
You're killing Sia here. It's killing him. You're spoiling his whole year. You're spoiling his life.
Sia
had dreams.
Sorry, Sia. I'm sorry.
There will be divorces one day, Sia.
Please all rise for the dove procession proceeding. The main guest of honor in the ceremony,
wow.
Sia Sangwin.
Rothschild.
Rothschild.
All right, very nice.
And cue Josh Groban and then, in the corner, starting to sing.
Will Josh Groban be singing at your wedding?
Yes, he'll sing me down the aisle. Thank you.
All right. Please don't invite me.
What?
I don't want to go to. I've had enough weddings.
This will
invite
not
me to
be
the divorce.
A wedding.
Invite me to the divorce.
Hey.
Mabale and I will be there.
No.
You know what? We won't come to your wedding. Mabs and I will be sitting in the back row of the court when you get divorced, and we'll be going, mm-hmm.
I will throw you a divorce ceremony. Okay.
She'll pay for it.
Well,
if I'm getting married to a Rothschild,
you are never
think I will get a divorce? Hail to the never.
All right, one more news story. Let's get this going. I want to meet someone really interesting in a moment or two. Her name is Professor Deirdre Byrne. She's the chairperson of the UNISA Africa Girl Development Program. Now, a lot of people talk about what's wrong with society, and they talk about where we could fix and heal South Africa and where we could start making a positive difference. But this program was launched to promote girls' rights and highlighting gender equalities, which inequalities, which they do very, very well. The UNISA AGDP is a joint initiative between the UNISA Gender Institute and the Thabo Mbeki Africa Leadership Institute, as well as the African Union. So I'm interested in speaking to her to find out also about how the average African girl's plight has improved over the last few years. According to the 2015 Africa Index, 9 of the world's 10 countries with the highest rates of child marriage are in Africa. Mm. So we talk about things we can actually solve. This is something we can start doing a thing about. And Deirdre will tell us what she thinks of that. Deirdre Byrne, the chairperson of that UNISA Africa Girl Development Program. She'll be in a moment or two to share her insights with us. Mubs, back to you.
All right. Last week, the first batch of meter taxi drivers registered with a new cab hailing app. Yes, you'll remember those dark days where violence broke out between meter taxi drivers and their Uber counterparts. Well, Yuku Rider has taken to Johannesburg's roads. It is a locally based app that connects users with hundreds of metered cab drivers around the country. The move indicates a shift from physical confrontations between meter taxi drivers who are losing market share and Uber. Back in July, an Uber driver died from his injuries after his car was set alight. Mm. This happened near Loftus-Versfeld Stadium in Pretoria.
Well, let me ask you this. If someone who drives a metered cab is prepared to set an Uber taxi driver alight, do you really want to be in the car with them? That's the only answer you need to give.
They
could have 17,000 apps for these assholes in their metered taxis. I'm not interested.
Now, only a handful of the metered drivers have been registered thus far with Yuku Rider. But more than 180,000 vehicles are expected to partner with the locally based app.
I'm not interested. Are you?
The CEO, Kenny Niemach, believes that meter taxis finally have the technology to compete with Uber in the country, and also it won't hurt if he makes, like, a nice buck from the, you know, from the business.
I'm not interested. I really am not. these guys, when they behaved as badly as they did and they assaulted and accosted all the Uber drivers, at that point I decided I'll never ever use a meet taxi again. I don't care if their prices are half. I don't care if their app is superb. I don't care if they offer me a bottle of water and a mint in the back of the car. I'm not interested in getting to your manky, nasty-ass cabs with those stinky seats and the undercarriage that's falling out. I'm not interested. Take your cab and shove it.
Well, damn it, the only reason I'm not a supporter is because they should have called it Yoo-hoo, actually, not Yoo-koo, like when you hail it and you go, Yoo-hoo!
Of course.
All right, very nice, Sia, thank you. All right, when we come back, we'll speak to Professor Deirdre Byrne. We've also got Digital Campus starting this morning, which I think will be very interesting for anybody who is thinking about studying, but you don't have time, or you don't have the fees, or you don't necessarily have the inclination to sit in a lecture hall. You want to do things in a 21st century way. Mabale wants to study further. She's not sure how to fit it in with her current lifestyle. And she's one of the people here who's discovered studying online. And to explore the benefits, she caught up with Gavin Olafir and Busisiwe Ramekwe, who are from Digital Campus. And we'll find out all about what she discovered in a short while. So all of that and more on the way. CliffCentral.com. On a Tuesday morning, a rainy Tuesday morning. To you, there's no crime. Let's take both of our souls and intertwine. When it comes to you, don't be blind. Watch me speak from my heart when it comes to you. Yeah, a little Justin Bieber for you. You like that, Mabs, or not?
It's all right.
That's sexual to your liking?
All right, listen, I didn't ever think that this was a big deal, but turns out it really is. There are child brides all over this continent, and it's 2017. Check your watch. Look at the date. It's December 2017. Could you ever imagined that there would be a need to talk about child brides in the year 2017? Well, someone who knows all about this and knows all about similar associated problems on the continent of Africa is Professor Deirdre Byrne. She's the chairperson of the UNISA Africa Girl Development Program, and she's here with us this morning to talk about a whole lot of things. I'm very, very pleased to see you, Deirdre, and thanks for coming to talk to us this morning on a rainy day like today.
Morning, Gareth, and thank you for having me on the show.
Sure, serious stuff, huh? Child brides. I had no idea that this was even an issue in the modern world. I thought this is something that people were dealing with in the 1500s and the 1700s maybe, but that most of us had, I don't know, that we'd become a little more evolved and mature and sensible about the way that we treat each other. You mean girls are going into slavery, essentially?
Basically. I'm afraid that's more or less what it boils down to, and there's a very high prevalence. If you look at the statistics, in the Central African Republic of Niger, 62% of girls under the age of 18 are married.
Girls under 18?
Under the age of
18.
62%. That's sort of two in every three.
Now, is this religious? Is it cultural? Is it legislated? How does this happen? Which society would consider this to be an appropriate way for young women to be bought and sold and to be forced into things that they might not necessarily be even old enough to decide they want?
Well, you really hit the nail on the head when you said bought and sold, because I believe I don't really know the motives for doing things like this, but I believe that most of the motives are economic. And I think because if we go into South African legislation on the matter of marriage, people under the age of 18 may not get married unless they have the permission of their parents. But for a girl, she can get married without her parents' permission if she's older than 15. So it means that a man who's over 18 can marry a girl who's 15 without her parents' consent, and then they enter into a contract which is recognized by the South African legislature. Also, remember, under traditional marriage.
We actually spoke about this the other day, which is why I wanted to get you in here. Remember, Mubs, you were telling us that story about how there are some countries that have different ages for boys and for girls when they can consider it the age of consent.
Yeah, and they kind of looked at it from a global perspective. And really the trend was that the younger the girl is, the better off that she gets married at that younger age.
Yeah. Whereas with boys, they tend to give them an extra few years.
Yeah.
So it's almost as if they either want young brides, and there are a bunch of creepy, you know, predatory men out there who make these rules, or that they think that boys are a lot more stupid, which may have merit. But we'll leave that alone for a second. Isn't it possible also, because if it's economic, as you say it is, and we take the whole continent into consideration, is it possible, though, that, you know, in some countries where there isn't necessarily this idea from a religious point of view, and in this case a Muslim religious point of view, that, you know, Muhammad had his first bride and she was 9. I think Aisha was 9 when he married her. That this doesn't happen in countries that are as economically desperate as Niger, but where they necessarily don't have as much of a widespread acceptance of Islamic law.
I actually don't think it's so much Muslim. I think it is patriarchal. And I think South Africa is a very patriarchal society.
So what are the numbers here?
I'm looking at 91,000.
91,000 child brides.
That's the number of girls between the ages of 12 and 17 who are either married, divorced, widowed, separated, or living with somebody as husband and wife. So it's quite high. The highest incidence is in KwaZulu-Natal, where the numbers are over 25,000, followed by Gauteng, where the numbers are over 15,000. And I think the notion that it's good to marry a girl between the age, a prepubescent or an early adolescent girl, is just very problematic because, I mean, there are ideas of possession here. Now, I'm somehow more of a man because I have an attractive young girl as my wife. And
how old are these husbands? I mean, do they range quite a lot or are they usually older men?
They're older.
So these are older men, what, 40s, 50s?
30s to 50s.
And they marry girls in their teens?
12 to 17.
I mean, that's
horrendous.
Awful. So when men resort to biology, their biological makeup, and they want to explain to you about how, oh, but you know, a prepubescent or a pubescent teenage girl then is the perfect child bearer for me. I mean, are we at the point now where we can just say, listen, just stop talking nonsense? You're looking for ways to excuse
a
pretty disgusting behavior.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I would really say all kinds of things to such a man. I would say, you know, because men say, well, you know, we have urges and they are inevitable and they're unstoppable and so on. Women also have urges and they don't seem to be inevitable and unstoppable.
Like the urge to not have to marry someone who's your grandfather's age.
Well, something like that, yes. Oh. But, I mean, women also have sexuality. Women also experience desire, and even young girls do.
Sure.
But this notion that I have to have a teenage bride, there's nothing have to about it at all. And I think I would just do exactly what Mub said. I would just say, get over yourself. You're talking rubbish.
Are there any studies that have been conducted around what sort of agency a very young girl like that might have? Because the reason we have an age of consent, and the reason that we prefer in most civilized places in the world to not have child brides is because these girls really don't know what they're getting into when this happens to them. There may be all kinds of cultural or traditional things that have gone on that inform them that this might be a good idea, but those might just be, in point of fact, wrong.
Correct.
And they haven't been given a chance to explore the world as adults with the ability to make their own important decisions about very, very big things like marriage.
Mm.
I mean, do we know anything about this now? Have we got studies in biology, studies in psychology?
There are studies in brain maturation, which indicate that the brain matures sort of throughout adolescence and reaches full maturity at the age of about 25. which means the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain situated at the front of the forehead, which is where emotion and decision-making reside, only matures at the age of about 25. So these girls who are younger than 17 or 18 cannot actually make rational decisions, literally, biologically and neurologically cannot make a rational decision, much less an informed decision. And if we look at the prevalence, we're looking at quite a high prevalence in rural areas,
yeah,
where typically young girls are not educated because of a patriarchal notion that one must educate the boy child and not educate the girl child. So she wouldn't know anything about her rights.
And a girl is just a means of bringing Lobola into the family, usually.
Yes.
So, you know, a girl's considered like, oh no, we've got a girl. We should have had a boy.
Well, families tend to view sons as being a way of enhancing the family resources.
Mm-hmm.
So a son is somebody who, oh, good heavens, thank goodness we had a son. The son will grow up and bring money into the family and help us to improve our economic situation. Whereas a girl, as you say, is going to bring Lebola into the family, but then all of her skills will just benefit another family when she goes and gets married. So a girl is seen as a drain on resources. And so in India, in one of the poorer provinces in India where there's a high incidence of child marriage, there's an organization called Breakthrough, which is working to help families appreciate daughters so that they don't do these kinds of things. They don't agree to marrying their daughter off at the age of 12.
It seems almost ridiculous to those of us who have the fortunate position of being, you know, exposed to a world of agency and of empowerment and emancipation of women, because we can get into debates around the glass ceiling, or we can get into discussions around whether or not women and men are given equal opportunities in the workplace or any of that stuff. But it almost seems trivial by comparison with stuff like this, which is so fundamental to these people's lives from that point on, and also to the whole idea, the whole notion of gender equality. This strikes at the heart of it. This seems almost where we should be putting most of our work and effort in, and not worrying about these other things, as much as they're important, with the same degree of outrage when we read about them. It seems people are more outraged when they hear that a female engineer is being paid 5 cents less than a male engineer, but there are women being sold into child bride situations.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's an obvious order of priority here that we need to pay attention to.
Absolutely. And I mean, those, if either party is younger than 16, it's statutory rape. So if a man has sex with a girl who's younger than 16, it's statutory rape, and it's a criminal act, and he can be prosecuted. So those men who are having sex with those girls, even if they're married, they're committing statutory rape. But now the girls don't know that, and their families don't know that, because they're 10 to 1, they're very badly educated. They don't know these kinds of things. So there's an urgent need to educate, to get these facts out there and let people know what's going on.
All right. And then the role of society, of culture. I mean, in culture, is there a way that this is made acceptable?
Absolutely.
And I mean, you know, culture, you get away with a lot in the world today if you could say it's my culture to do something.
I'm afraid you do. And a lot of traditional cultures will say things like, in our culture, not so much it's okay to marry a girl at the age of 12, but a girl's destiny, sort of a Freudian anatomy's destiny thing, is to bear children and look after the home and take care of the family. And that's what she's there for.
Mm-hmm.
You see, she's
she
not
has
there,
no say in the matter.
But she's not there to do anything in society, be a rocket scientist or a biologist or a CEO or anything important like that.
But then we hear our politicians saying women this and women that, and, you know, we should have a woman president and all this kind of thing. But these are very often the same male politicians who try to engender this nonsense, if you pardon me, use the word gender, in their own society back home.
Well, how many wives and children has our current president got?
Yeah.
And he's 21 at the last count, children?
He would appear to be in favor of collecting women for this purpose. He would appear to be in favor also of producing children for this purpose.
Gareth, I've gone a bit off politicians recently.
Oh, you too?
Yes.
Yeah, me as well, Prof. Don't feel,
I think everybody
don't feel too bad about that.
And I think politicians are quite cynical.
Mm.
So they will say what will get them votes.
Yeah.
I mean, But then are we, Dlamini Zuma will say that she's in favor of women's rights, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But she won't be opposed to a handout from a shady business deal.
Sure. Now, this is a problem with culture and politicians, but it's also a problem with religion, and we've got to deal with this because the Christian church was only tamed from its very ugly excesses with regard to child rape very recently. And we know that the Islamic faith has got its own questions to answer in respect of the way it treats women and children. And there are probably other things in all the other religions that make women even less equal than the most democratic socialist could possibly hope for them to be in a modern society. Right?
Absolutely. There's a church in Harare where the minister is arranging marriages with girls of the age of 2. So, and of course there's a monetary kickback there. So the man will then say, I want that one, and she's sort of like 60 centimeters tall. Mm. And then when she gets to the age of 9 or 10, the marriage will be solemnized, he'll take her to his house, and this is going on happily. So religion does have a large amount to answer for, and we need to speak to people, lots of them.
Well, I'm horrified that we have in this day and age to deal with this problem and to speak about it like this, as if it's something taboo and something that that people don't know about.
Mm.
Because in point of fact, this is something that should be on the top of everyone's agenda right now. If you know this is going on in your society, what can you do? What if you're a young girl? I mean, is there a way to empower yourself and to free yourself of this?
I vacillate between thinking that those 91,000 young girls are sort of basically lost. Because, I mean, we haven't done all the research, but I want to know how many of them have got children.
Hmm.
Those young girls are very fertile, and they're quite likely to have children, or they're quite likely to have more children than one. So then you then want to go take them and say, listen, what you're doing is wrong, come here and go to school.
But they're not trapped with a family.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're responsible. And their parents probably don't have the money either. So they could almost be a lost generation. What I'm hoping to do by talking about this and putting it out there in the world at large, and thank you to your show for helping me do that, is to save the next generation.
I mean, this is not a sexy topic. This is not something that makes everybody go, ooh, it's mm-hmm. how exciting and sexy. It's about a real social problem that I don't think a lot of people are comfortable talking about, because it forces them to look in the mirror and deal with their own religion, culture, tradition, their own attitude towards women if they're men. It's not pleasant.
Not at all. No, it really isn't. I mean, it also goes to the root of our society. And I first heard about this state of affairs from the Department of Women, and they were saying to me, if this continues, we are looking at a sort of implosion of South African society. Because the children of these marriages are not going to be growing up in families with resources. They're not going to be going to school.
So we perpetuate the cycle.
So it's imperative. We need to stop it now.
Well, I'm very glad you could spend some time with us this morning. I'm sorry that it's not the most enjoyable thing to discuss, but it's your work. And thank you for doing it, because this is important work that we need to be paying attention to in South Africa if we want to change things for the better. Everybody who says they want to change things, this is something we can actually do. I mean, this is something we should know about. I didn't know 91,000 girls in this country were slaves.
Sure. And to think that Gauteng is
second
cosmopolitan and forward-thinking.
Second most child brides in the country. Mm. Horrifying.
It's really alarming.
All right, Prof, thank you. Professor Deirdre Byrne, the chairperson of the UNISA Africa Girl Development Program. And good luck with your work. And I hope you do get a little bit of a break over the December holidays.
Thank you so much, and you too.
Yeah, wow. What a thing. A thing to have to deal with every day.
Mm.
Huh? Mubs, tell us about Digital Campus. You've been talking to Busi Siwe and you've been talking to Gavin for the last couple of weeks. You guys have been talking about the courses that they offer.
Yes, well, you know, Gareth, when you've spent a good decade of your life becoming a failure, at one point you've got to then decide, okay, hang on,
come on.
It's time for me to get my shit together. You know, at home I'm surrounded by people who are actually doing things with their lives. Like my brother's now going for his PhD. My cousin is, like, getting her psychology shit together. Her husband is now becoming a lawyer. Like, everybody at home is getting their shit together.
And they look at you.
Well, I look at me. No. I look at me and I'm just like, okay, now what? So I'm seriously considering going back to school because, you know, it's just, it's a threat that I have made for the longest time, but now there are no more excuses with facilities like Digital Campus around because there is actually a way for me to put my money where my mouth is and to just do it.
Well, every Tuesday and Thursday, we're going to play out an episode of the five-part series. Within each episode, Mubs will reveal some benefits of studying online that she has discovered with Gavin and Busisiwe. This podcast created in conjunction with Wits Digital Campus. You can listen to the podcast. You can go to cliffcentral.com and download it anytime you like. There's a link on the homepage. And for more information, you can always visit digitalcampus.co.za. Take a listen to this. We'll come back with the unnews in a minute and then our guest for today.
We live in an era where everything has moved online, including shopping, banking, and watching TV. Education is no exception. Studying online seems a natural next step. But what are the benefits? I'm Mabale Moloi, and for years I have been threatening to go back to learning to continue my studies. But the biggest problem that I face is finding the time through my busy schedule. To combat this challenge, I have discovered studying online and the flexibility that it has to offer. You may be in a similar situation where you want to take the next step, but you just do not have the time to go to university. So I decided to explore this option of moving my studies online. Over the next few episodes, we're going to be learning the benefits that studying online has for you with the help of Digital Campus, an online studying platform in partnership with Wits University that offers short accredited courses. One of the benefits that struck a chord with me was the flexibility that it offers. So I caught up with Gavin Olifir. He is a senior partner and managing executive at Digital Campus, and Busisiwe Ramekwe, researcher in new business development at Digital Campus, to find out more.
As the world is changing and the demand for online learning was growing exponentially, we need a different way of learning. And particularly in the accredited space, people were paying for opportunities to study online and still get a certificate of competence through a credible university such as Wits.
Busisiwe weighs in on how studying online can also save you time.
When you think about education, a lot of people think about time. How much time do I have to offer this course? Do I have time to go to class? Do I have time to leave work? Will I get time away from work to attend classes? And digital allows you to do that. It allows you to work at your pace, at your time, and remotely. As an organization, your staff would not have to leave work for hours on end attending classes. So as an organization, you benefit from that aspect. You don't have to have your staff out of the office. I think as a working woman, you're able to have a career, to have a family, and still advance and go on a learning journey.
Many of us work full-time, including myself, and that makes it difficult to get away from the office. And driving to lecture seems like a drag, but Gavin adds that with online studying, this challenge is taken care of.
You don't have to get into your car and travel to the campus to be in a classroom. The flexibility comes is, you know, you can do it pretty much any time during the day or night when you have opportunity and time to study online.
These days, just about everyone has a smartphone or has access to a computer or a laptop. The importance of these gadgets is making it easier and easier to access information.
Digital, as the name suggests, means we need to be pervasive across all types of devices. So whether it's a desktop, laptop, smartphone, tablet, across multiple device types, whether you're Android or iOS. So learning can happen across all of these. You could literally start the course on your laptop, check out at a certain point and pick it up again at the place where you left off on your mobile device. And we've had learners in the past that completed the entire course bar the exam completely on their smartphone. And the level of flexibility that gave her was the opportunity to learn on the go. So, when you're sitting waiting for a bus or a taxi or for, you know, your next meeting and you need to quickly, you know, log in, catch up with some of the learning, read some of the articles that you need to go through, perhaps do a couple of exercises, watch a short video, all of that is available online at at the drop of a hat and wherever you are on whatever device you are.
I can see how these benefits can work for not just me, but anyone. From studying in your own time, using your own devices, to saving you costs by not having to buy textbooks or waste money on fuel. In our next episode, we will look at even more benefits. For more information, visit digitalcampus.co.za or check out their social media pages and follow this podcast on cliffcentral.com.
So how do you like that? Mub's giving you a bit of a first attempt at trying to figure out a new way to study and a new way to get yourself ahead. And this is, I think, a much more sensible way than some of the ways that you you might have thought of before. You could save a whole lot of money. You can make it more efficient. And for many of us who are busy, this is something that can fit into your life, not the other way around. You don't have to change your life to fit it in. So there we go. Digital Campus. For more information, go to digitalcampus.co.za. And if you'd like to listen to that podcast or any of the others in the series, just go to cliffcentral.com and download it to your device today. All right, it's time for the unnews, and then we're going to replay an interview that we had with Cindy Alter. This is one of my favorite interviews, not only because she was a musician, and you know I love having musicians in here. We get to have really interesting conversations about something I love, music, and that I think a lot of people love. But she was so open. She shared her life, this fascinating life that she had as a rock star in South Africa in the 1980s, and the incredible experiences that she had since, the ups and downs of a life that's been lived to the full. Cindy Alter, proper rocker, coming up next on cliffcentral.com. But first, here's the important stuff. The unnews. Cyril Ramaphosa has won the nomination race within the ANC provinces to become their new president, but this is nothing to be banked on. Cyril was, after all, part of South Africa's Rugby World Cup bid, where they were nominated as the winners, only to be pipped to the post by someone else. Let that be a lesson. Jay-Z has finally officially admitted to cheating on Beyoncé. He did, however, deny being beaten up by Solange. He said she got some lucky shots in, but in a fair fight, she wouldn't stand a chance. But he added he would never hit a woman because he is a devoted husband who respects women. And finally, Saru have asked Alistair Coetzee to present his case as to why he should continue as the Springbok coach. He says he cannot predict the future, but will tell Saru that he's on the right track. He will also then play them Al Pacino's inspirational speech from the movie Any Given Sunday and hope that they will understand that random words are good enough to hold him in his job. Here's Cindy Alter on cliffcentral.com, just for your listening pleasure this rainy Tuesday morning.
This is cliffcentral.com.